together under everybody's nose. The Carlyle Group, since years before, still raking in billions and itching for more. It's blood for oil, we know there's a link. They say Cold War, we say Code Pink. It's blood for oil, we know there's a link. They say Code War, we say Code Pink. Code Pink.
Good morning. This is Medea Benjamin, and with me in the studio is
Terry Matson.
Terry, hello. Good to see you. I know you just got off a plane.
I just got off a plane yesterday, returning from Venezuela after 10 days in the country.
So you have a lot to tell us, and we have some exciting other guests who are joining us. This is the second week of Code Pink Radio, and we're very excited because the Code Pink Radio is being broadcast by Pacific Radio on two of the stations, WPFW, here we are in Washington, D.C., and WBAI in New York City, where we will be doing some of our shows from as well. So on our second week, we are going to update people on some of the crazy, awful things the U.S. government is doing around Venezuela and how that's affecting the people of Venezuela. But before we start into that, Terry, I wanted to give an update from Puerto Rico. I don't know if you've been able to watch any of the struggles going on there while you were down in Venezuela.
Well, there's a lot of struggles throughout the Americas right now. And I think that Puerto Rico is a fantastic example of what people power can and should be. And the people in the streets have been incredibly inspiring for many, many people and movements throughout the Americas, but really a great example for those of us, here at home, because Puerto Rican people are U.S. citizens, and so they're a great example for our own population.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Terry, because I have people, where was I? We were just walking around the streets around this these latest shootings and getting ready to do another protest at the White House, and some man was walking next to me, and he said, "You're Code Pink, right?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Why aren't we rising up like the people of Puerto Rico? Well, we have these mass shootings. Why aren't people really taking out into the streets?" Or whatever the issue is, have we lost our ability to really rise up as a people? And I said to him just what you did, which is Puerto Rican people are our people. We are Puerto Rico. And so it is very exciting. And we have a wonderful Code Pink representative, Kathy Gannett, who lives in Vieques, and she's been very involved in the struggle and wanted me to read a little bit of an update that she was giving, because just yesterday there was the third governor in a week.
Oh, correct.
was
direct
put
democracy
into power, Wanda Vasquez. And this is, you know, part of the Democratic struggle as they got rid of this Rocio. And then there was a second person who was put in, and he was very short-lived, Pedro Pierluisi. And now they have Wanda Vasquez. But according to Kathy, Wanda Vasquez is not the gal for the job. They do not want her staying in because she is seen as part of the whole failed, corrupt government of Rocio. And she's been a team player in that corrupt cabinet. And so people of Puerto Rico have not been on the streets since July 13th just to get one more corrupt person in power. And we don't think that Wanda Vasquez is going to last very long. And so according to our friend Kathy Gannett, she says protesters are continuing to fight for a transparent and representative government, for the protection of civil rights, for putting human needs before profits. A central demand of the protest is to abolish the Fiscal Control Board. And that was that board that was put into place to implement these austerity measures, known as the Junta, and to eliminate the illegal debt created by vulture capitalists. All of this jockeying for power takes place while our schools are going to open next week with 1,000 teacher positions vacant. And her call at the end of this is for Wanda to resign and take this whole corrupt junta with her.
Well, that's a lot. But for better or worse, it's been a lot for Puerto Rico, from its very inception as part of the United States. This is a battle for them since 1898. And so it's really great that she's stating people before profits. Many people would consider Puerto Rico simply a colony of the United States, and they are not full citizens with voting rights as you and I have here in mainland United.
Well, except we're in Washington, D.C., so we don't have full voting rights either.
I keep forgetting I'm in Washington, just moving here from San Francisco. Yeah, I don't have a congressman anymore. That's true. So it's really...
And you don't have senators.
I don't have anything. No. I'm like in this void now.
Yes.
Yeah, this political void as far as voting rights. But I think Kathy brings up a couple really great points. People versus profits, which I think many of us are suffering from here on the mainland of the United States, but we don't quite see it that way yet. Perhaps we haven't lost enough as they have in Puerto Rico after the hurricane. They've never recovered. They've never really been fully allowed to recover. So they're doing something for themselves. And it's tragic what has happened to them, and yet it's really inspiring and dramatic the movement they've created for themselves.
And before we get into Venezuela, I wanted to bring up another country because I know you've been following this as well, and that is Honduras. Oh. Unfortunately, not with the positive results of people power that we've seen in Puerto Rico, but with people power nonetheless. Can you give us a bit of an update on Honduras?
Well, here's what's fascinating to me with Honduras, and I've been many times over the years, since the coup in 2009, the U.S. supported coup in 2009. Everything that the U.S. State Department, or much of the rhetoric that comes out of Washington regarding countries that in the Americas that the U.S. doesn't quote-unquote approve of or wants to see a different government are really criticized for lack of democracy, for impunity, for corruption. We know now for a fact that the Honduras government is corrupt, is involved in narco trafficking. That news broke last week in establishment newspapers, the Washington Post and the New York Times, that the Honduran president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, has been investigated for narco trafficking since 2013.
And this is in U.S. courts.
This
right?
is in U.S. courts. This is coming out. This is a U.S. Installed government, U.S. backed government. And it's fascinating that this story is breaking in what we would call mainstream establishment media. So it's going to really be interesting to see what unfolds.
So we wanted to bring up Honduras because we are very involved with people who have been put in prison in Honduras as political prisoners for their activist work. And I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the case of Edwin Espinal.
Well, Edwin is a personal friend of mine and a longtime human rights activist in Venezuela, or excuse me, in Honduras, although he is very pro human rights and social movements in Venezuela as well. He was protesting the fraudulent elections in November of 17 in Honduras and was arrested for his activity. He is still sitting in prison without a trial, and it's been 19 plus months. There is very little access to him. His wife is a friend of mine as well, Karen Spring, a Canadian activist. And Edwin has been petitioning with him and on his own behalf and as well as three other prisoners to be taken out of the general prison population due to threats on his life. And so we don't know for sure his conditions. The little we do know is that he's in a very small cell with three other men without proper sanitary conditions, no toilet, no fresh drinking water. So there is definitely multiple levels of advocacy that need to be done on the political prisoner issue in Honduras. One, just access to the legal system, and two, while being held pretrial to have humane conditions. Fresh drinking water, access to toilets, and fresh air. I think Edwin gets maybe 1 hour of fresh air and sunlight a week, possibly even a month.
Wow. And if people want to get involved in Edwin's case, is there anything that you can suggest that they do?
Well, there's a couple things. One, to work with us at codepink.org. And also, there's a great Facebook page that updates on Edwin's condition and circumstances. It's called Edwin Espinal Libertad, or Free Edwin Espinal on Facebook. It's a great Facebook page with daily updates, almost daily updates.
Okay, and while we are trying to get our Venezuelan guest on the phone, I just wanted to give a little background. So there is so much happening right now. We have been witnessing the Trump administration using economic sanctions as a form of warfare. We've seen it way before the Trump administration in the case of Cuba, where there's been an economic blockade since 1962. Just think about that. 1962, it's been in place, and yet it has not toppled the revolutionary government of Cuba. So that's why during the Obama administration, there was a voice of rationality that said maybe we should try something different, and instead changed the path to have diplomatic relations with Cuba. Unfortunately, the economic sanctions were not lifted because that has to be done by Congress. And so we still have the economic blockade in Cuba. We have the economic blockade in the case of Iran, which has been devastating to the Iranian people. It's been in place in some form or another since 1979, but really in the last 10 years has been terrible. Okay, and now we got our guest who we've been waiting for. And so, Terry, can you introduce our guest from Venezuela?
So I'm very pleased to have Carlos Ron join us this morning. Carlos Ron is the Vice Minister North America for the Venezuelan Foreign Ministry, and we're very pleased to have him personally join us this morning to discuss this expansion of the U.S. blockade quarantine on Venezuela. Carlos, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you very much.
Good morning. Nice to have you join us.
Good morning, Carlos. It's Medea as well.
Hi, how are you today? How are you? Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here with you. And, you know, especially, again, I want to take the opportunity briefly just to thank you again for the role as co-think that you played in the sense of international law and the sense of our embassy in Washington, D.C., As you see, you know, things have escalated once again. I think the Trump administration has decided to strengthen their blockade against Venezuela, a blockade that was already exerting a huge toll on Venezuelan people, not allowing us to do the right, you know, imports and purchases of food, medicine, and other important supplies that we need for just normal day-to-day living. And now with the new executive order, basically it enacts a whole range of new blocks, specifically threatening companies, even third parties that would deal with Venezuela from providing any type of services to the whole government of Venezuela. Interestingly, they do have some licenses for the usurping fake government of Juan Guaido. And this is an important issue because they're trying to give, through a U.S. executive order, an actual foundation that for Guaido to have a range of actions that otherwise would not exist because he doesn't really have a ground here in Venezuela that he could be able to do that with.
So, Carlos, do you see this as a, or maybe the best way to frame this is an attempt by the U.S. to basically appropriate Venezuela's businesses, banking accounts, natural resources, basically an appropriation of all of Venezuela's wealth in all its forms from the democratically elected government to the U.S. Imposed or created government.
Exactly. And one of the main issues there is that all assets that Venezuela has within the United States territory are now frozen and now are at the disposal of the so-called government of Juan Guaido. So basically, you know, because he doesn't have real legal groundwork to, you know, exercise power here in Venezuela, what the U.S. is doing is giving him whatever Venezuela has in the United States for him to decide and act and use as he wishes, which is completely contrary to any legislation possible here in Venezuela. I mean, there's nothing here within the constitutional framework or within any other space that would legitimize such action. So they're already, to begin with, they're already acting illegally here within the Venezuelan legal framework. And in addition, you know, we see that especially, you know, the resources regarding CITGO as a company are now under their control, and the threat to other countries from helping Venezuela. That's the thing that, you know, we haven't been able to do certain payments, purchases, and all these things because companies or even banks feel threatened by the U.S., that they're going to be placed under sanctions as well, or they're going to lose their businesses in the U.S., or things to that effect, if they do dealings with Venezuela in any form.
Well, that's why the pronouncement that food and medicines would not be affected by this is so ridiculous, because of what you just said, the banks, insurance companies. And if you could also tell us about this shipment of soy products that was stopped, that has not been reported in the U.S. press, or it's been reported as a fake.
Yeah. No, there was a new statement by the people from the Panama Canal saying that the shipment was stopped, and now they're alleging that they're finding some legal paperwork that was outdated, and that's why they stopped, and, you know, trying to find a way to justify it. But the truth is that as soon as the shipment was going to port and they found out they were coming to Venezuela, they decided to block it. Again, it's fear of retaliation from the U.S. government. And they've been really clear on that. You know, yesterday's intervention of Bolton at the Lima conference was very clear that, you know, they were ready to do things to other countries. They even talked about Russia and China, which are two big countries and were very powerful, and they would, you know, seek to enact actions against anyone who's helping Venezuela in any way or form.
Carlos, do we know where this ship was registered, the ship that was detained, seized in the Panama Canal? What was its port of origination? Do we know that?
I don't have that with me right now, but I do know that it's not, you know, it was something that was coming from Venezuela. It was clearly as a purchase that was being done by the government, and that was what motivated the block.
This is one thing that I think is really great for us to perhaps take an opportunity to share with our listeners this morning, mm-hmm. is to understand sanctions or the more preferable term, unilateral coercive measures, because mm-hmm. sanctions are generally a majority voted upon maneuver from the United Nations or Organization mm-hmm. of American States. And right now, the sanctions, quote unquote, are being unilaterally imposed by the United States and a few of its allies. But what the U.S. public does not quite understand is that often when what we're not often, but right now, quite frankly, the targeted nations such as Iran, Venezuela, North Korea, the principal targets are not the only victims of sanctions. There are secondary and tertiary victims. As right now, for the United States and Venezuela, it would be Germany and other European nations not being able to trade for fear of banking sanctions, etc. But also all of the innocent civilians on both sides of the political spectrum throughout your country. And maybe you could talk a little bit about that, how the sanctions are affecting your own countrymen.
No, again, once again, the way that we've been discussing this, you know, they claim that there's some licenses and there's some way to allow, food and medicine to get through. The thing is, if we make a payment, it doesn't really it doesn't matter if we're buying a chair or if we're buying a first aid kit. What every bank or every institution is seeing is a payment from the government of Venezuela. That immediately gets blocked by the banks, whether it be because they are directly threatened with a block or because of over-compliance. They decide, look, we don't want to risk getting in trouble because we're in Venezuela, so let's just stop this. Now, when that is done, there's a direct impact on the population, not on leaders, not on a party, but there's a direct impact on the whole population of Venezuela, on the whole population of Iran, North Korea, all these other countries that are under the regime of so-called sanctions, because it affects them directly in that way. It does hurt everybody. It does hurt the people, and it's a failed, you know, a strategy that has never worked. You have countries before, you know, that if, when you look at the situation, you've only created more damage to those countries, and at the end of the day, you just worsen the relationship between the United States and those countries. You know, what we really need to do is, you know, engage in the diplomacy. That's what we've been talking about. We have to find ways to communicate and reach agreement amongst ourselves, but through the tools that diplomacy lays out, not through these acts of war. But these, in essence, are acts of war, because you are costing lives. I mean, and I don't take it by the word of the Venezuelan government. You look at the report that FIPER, the study that Jeffrey Sachs and Mark Weisbrot did, and they count over, you know, 3,000 deaths, product of not being able to import the necessary items to Venezuela. So there's damage that is done directly by these so-called sanctions.
So speaking of using diplomacy instead, it seems that because of these sanctions now, the government of Venezuela has cut off the talks that have been taking place. Is that the case? And could you tell us a little bit more about that?
So the president made a decision. It was a tough decision, because the president has always been very firm on the idea of dialogue. But the issue is, if we are completely, you know, the dialogue from the opposition is completely controlled by the decisions made by Bolton, State Department, and so forth. If we're sitting on the table so that we are going to get more attacks on the Venezuelan people, we're not talking. We're not solving anything. We need to, you know, we need to think about how we can really solve political differences, but not in this way, not under menace, not under threats, not under direct attack to the Venezuelan people. So the decision made by the president was to suspend the talks until, you know, we see a change of course in that way. But we cannot allow the opposition the opposition shouldn't even want to allow themselves to be part of that game and you know, have themselves dragged into this sort of manipulation, and that affects the whole Venezuelan people.
Well, that's right. When you're in the middle of talks, and I think there have been five rounds of talks in Barbados that have been mediated by Norway. So here you are in the middle of talks, and both sides seem to be saying that there was progress being made. And then all of a sudden the U.S. comes in and imposes this incredibly horrific sanctions, and the opposition says, yay, this is good. Is that the way it is?
No, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, you know. And the most difficult part of these talks is precisely that they are, you know, once we get to the table, whatever the opposition can agree with is all going to be vetoed by the United States. So who are we really talking to? You know, where are the decisions really made?
Absolutely.
That's difficulty.
Yeah, very hard to talk when you know that the puppet master is sitting in Washington, D.C., and it probably is John Bolton, who himself said at that Lima conference, the time for talks is over. So, you know, now it's being portrayed as if Venezuela pulled out of the talks, but the U.S. had already said, what do you say, that Maduro is tapping, wasting our time with these talks. So really it was Bolton that didn't want these talks to continue.
Prince, I have to go because I have to enter the meeting right now.
Yes, we thank you for your time. We know you're very busy. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us.
So, Terry, maybe you and I could continue with that discussion because you've spent a lot of time down there. You've seen the results of these sanctions firsthand. And to know now that these sanctions are going to be made even worse because already they were affecting the entire population, and now it's a magnitude of many fold over that it's going to affect the economy. So you must be feeling this personally, knowing that your friends there are going to suffer even more. Can you talk a little bit?
Well, it's very personal, and particularly having just returned. There's a couple things I'd like to just follow up on. Carlos Ron's conversation regarding the effect or the fallout of the sanctions on the, and how it's affecting average citizens. Yes, there's a very imperative report to read by CEPR, prepared by Mark Weisbrot.
CEPR is the Center for Economic and Policy Research.
Correct. And prepared by Mark Weisbrot and Jeffrey Sachs, but also more recently, there's been a report prepared by Francisco Rodriguez, who was a year ago the campaign manager and prior to that economic advisor for Henri Falcón, an opposition presidential candidate. So to have someone who represented an opposition presidential candidate stepping forward with a published report that, the expansion of sanctions could possibly create a national famine in Venezuela. That's significant to hear this coming from the other side, quote unquote, as well. So this is, you know, except for that hard right that I define as the hard right, that 1% wealthy business class, represented by Guaido, you know, there's almost a universal opinion that the sanctions are universal coercive measures need to be lifted at the very least for food and medicines. And then, you know, looking at the repercussions, there has been a flight migration from Venezuela. Really more recently, I would, in my personal experience, have seen this maybe more since 2017. I think it was August of 17 when the Trump administration really expanded the financial sanctions. I would argue these sanctions are being used to encourage migration, people to leave, which of course damages institutions, communities, and leaves the country in a very weak position for some form of invasion, not necessarily military, but an economic invasion. It appears you could argue that the conditions are being made for a major reconstruction project financed by the United States.
And let's not forget that this mass migration is also putting tremendous pressure on the neighboring countries as well.
It is, yes. And in fact, I was able to attend an event on how migration is affecting Ecuador. And Ecuador used to be a country that migrating Venezuelans would pass through. More and more Venezuelans have chosen to remain in Ecuador. There now is an expansion in Ecuador of USAID and State Department presence to fund programs to work with assimilating Venezuelan migrants. And so you can see how now migration is perhaps being used in Ecuador to develop a U.S. model economy.
And this is after the progressive government of Rafael Correa was replaced by
Moreno.
Moreno, anyway. A very U.S.-supported government. We are going to take a short break, and we will come back. We have another guest who will be joining us who also just returned from Venezuela. So thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
Sabio y paciente es el decir de los viejos que al cantar de guacharaca saben calcular el tiempo. Dicen que viene la hora, mira, para ponernos contentos. Se fue Bolívar ayer, pero hoy viene de regreso.
Vámonos para allá, vamos a su encuentro. Vámonos para allá, vamos a su encuentro.
Dicen que Bolívar trae furia y coraje por dentro al ver que nos han quitado lo que él dejó siendo nuestro.
Dicen que viene caliente por nuestro comportamiento al dejar caer su espada y también su pensamiento. Vámonos para allá, vamos a su encuentro. Vámonos para allá, vamos a su encuentro.
So you are listening to Code Pink Radio. We are being broadcast here from WPFW in Washington, D.C., and also from WBAI in New York City, a very exciting co-production of these two terrific stations. And I hope our listeners will be giving their financial support to these great community radio stations. And we are very delighted to have a new show every Thursday, 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. And on the second half of the show, we will be accepting call-ins. If you have any questions or comments, please call in to 202-588-0893. And Terry, we have a new guest in the studio with us. Do you want to introduce him?
We have our fellow activist, compatriot, and friend, Sergio Torres. Sergio is Nicaraguan by birth, but born in, but raised in the United States. So he's one of those citizens who has two passports, one from Nicaragua and one here from the United States. And we'll explain the significance of that a little later in our story. But Sergio came to us through the Embassy Protective Collective. And
our listeners probably have no idea what that is. So maybe we should give a very quick summary of what that is, and I can do that. So when it looked like when the U.S. had declared Juan Guaido the president of Venezuela, even though nobody had ever elected him as president.
That actually is so funny.
And then we saw here in Washington, D.C. that this fake government then had a fake ambassador, and his name is Carlos Vecchio, and they took over a military attaché building in Washington, D.C., and we went to their press conference horrified, and they said that they were going to take over the Venezuelan embassy, and we said, oh my goodness, that's terrible. I mean, this is a fake government. They can't just take over an embassy. And so we contacted people in the Venezuelan government, and we said, we want to be accompaniment. We want to be there with you inside this embassy to say that the rightful government is the one that was elected, and that the U.S. just can't give this over to somebody else that they want. And it took a little bit of time for the Venezuelan government to agree to it. And then we started literally living in the embassy, sleeping there day and night. And for the first couple of weeks, there were still Venezuelan embassy people in there with us. They were then forced to leave. And so it was just the embassy protectors. And things got rough. We can talk about that if anybody wants to. But that's just a little background to say that we kept that embassy for 5 weeks until we were finally ousted from there. And now it is unfortunately in the hands of the Juan Guaido representatives here. So Sergio, welcome. And we also, can you just
Yeah. Thank you for inviting me, guys. It's a pleasure for me to be with you guys today and share about what we live outside the embassy, inside, and Venezuela. I think there's a call.
Yeah, but maybe we should take our call. Caller, can you hear us? Go ahead.
Good morning. Hi. I'm sorry to change the subject, but I thought you might know, Medea. I saw on the Post today that the judge that overseeing Chelsea Manning's case has says the fines will continue. She's being held in the William Truesdale detention facility in Alexandria, you know, at now a cost of $1,000 a day for contempt of court charges. I wonder if you know anything about the next demonstration or the status of that case, and maybe you can take it. I'll take it off the air. Thanks.
Yes. Well, thank you so much in reminding us about the terrible conditions that Chelsea Manning is in because she refuses to collaborate with the U.S. government and believes that things like free speech are worthy of going to jail for and supporting the rights of journalists like Julian Assange. So thank you for reminding us. I don't know when the next demonstration is, but we do have a way to stay in touch with you, and that is if you send us an email at radio@codepink.org. We can communicate with you and get you that information. So thank you very much, and we'll go back to Venezuela.
Well, I think here's something interesting with what the caller just mentioned, talking about Chelsea Manning and you know, the suppression of free speech and journalism in this country. When Sergio and I met on a recent delegation to Venezuela, and he returned from the trip Friday and was detained in immigration and was in a we're not exactly sure what the trigger was for his pulling. As we introduced him, he is a dual citizen. He's a dual citizen with a country that perhaps John Bolton doesn't like. But he was pulled for a secondary conversation.
Well, let's hear from him.
Yeah, when we arrived to D.C., to Dulles Airport, they passed me to a secondary interview, whatever they call it. And it's funny because I was actually the last person to show into that room. And there was about 15, 20 people behind me that they were already in that room. And this Latino CBP officer come at me, and he's like with his hands and tell me to get close to him. And the first question was what I was doing in Venezuela. And then if I was friend of Maduro. And I was like, no, like I'm not. And all that question
was, what's your business?
Exactly. What was my business with the government of Venezuela? What was my business with Maduro? What was my business with Maduro and the government of Venezuela? And if I was representing Nicaragua, what was the meeting about with Maduro? What we spoke with him, what we talked about? Literally, I didn't get the chance to talk to him. I just say hi when I shake his hand. So that's as much as I could tell him. I feel somehow like this happened. They saw me in the group as the vulnerable because I was the Latino. This guy, you know, I was an easy target for them.
And what did they do?
As soon as they saw my passport, they pulled me in. Like,
but about the phone?
Oh, no. Yeah, thank you for reminding me. They grabbed my phone, and they went through my phone. They told me if I didn't get my phone and unlock it, they were going to seize my phone and take it for a month to send it for investigations and, you know, open my phone. They went through all my browser and everything on my phone. They did have notes on a paper about everybody that was in Venezuela in the group.
So I just want to say that as somebody who travels a lot and goes to countries that are not the most on the best terms with the United States, this unfortunately happens a lot. It happens to me when I travel, get pulled aside, my computer gets taken, my phone gets taken. And in customs, it is no man's land. I mean, we have zero rights there. So I'm sorry for what happened to you, and I'm sorry this happens to many of us that do the job that we want our government to do, which is to be citizen diplomats. And that's what you were doing in Venezuela. So maybe we could talk a little bit more about what you actually saw in Venezuela, and particularly, I think, for the public to understand what do sanctions mean to people on the ground.
Medea, First of all, I would say our trip to Venezuela was a life-changing trip. I don't think any of us will be ever the same person, ever. The way the people is organized, the way people is facing the sanctions is so, is heroic. They, you know, they go rid of the middleman. Now they get the product in between, you know, the people, the city and the people in the country, their grains and everything. We went to so many communities. We went to 23 de Enero. We went to Lakota 905 that many people tweeted me and be like, go there because you're going to get killed. Well, we went to Lakota 905. And the way people organize and this build, this housing in 4 years, the government give them money. They organized the whole community decided to build the place. They were supposed to build 80 apartments. They did 96, I think, 94.
96.
Exactly. And everywhere we went to, people will tell us, can you please share with the world what's happening in Venezuela? We are trying to survive. We're trying to face the sanctions because the sanctions are not against the government. The sanctions is hurting the Venezuelan people. That people is like, I just like, it's so emotional for me.
And me as well.
I'm seeing Terry crying right here.
It is so emotional.
Yeah,
it is
me as well.
You think of real people, and that's what we need to hear. So maybe, Terry, tell us some of the, you know, why are you getting so emotional when
you
hear this?
First of all, I just have to say, you know, listening to you speak, Sergio, and saying, you know, this recent trip changed your life. And that's what delegations are all about. People-to-people exchange and getting people to know one another as human beings from all different political perspectives. For me, this particular trip was my 14th or 15th time to Venezuela in as many years. And I think the most important thing, and I think you could probably share this sentiment with me, Sergio, is you walk the streets, particularly in Caracas, which is often defined as the most dangerous city in the Americas. I would argue that's probably San Pedro Sula or Tegucigalpa in Honduras, the U.S.-supported government and country. You walk the streets, and it's incredibly normal.
No, completely.
Despite everything this country and its people are up against, it is amazing the level of normalcy on the streets and how friendly people are. They talk to you. They're still smiling. That is not to say life is not incredibly difficult. It is not easy to navigate what we would call here in the Northern Hemisphere a normal day. But this is not a country on the verge of civil war. And I think that's the biggest message that we can share with U.S. citizens right now. There is no reason for a military invasion of this country. There is most certainly our need for as activists and fellow travelers and human beings to let the world know that there is a form of warfare on Venezuela. It's not what we would define as a traditional war. It is an economic war, and we need to do a better job at helping U.S. citizens understand sanctions as a form of warfare. Many of us do not understand this. We tend to say, oh, there's no boots on the ground in Venezuela. We're not dropping bombs on Venezuela. How bad can it be? The country has been almost completely shut off from all forms of international trade and banking transactions.
I think a lot of people don't understand what's actually happening over there with all the sanctions. Who's being hurt is the people in the city, in the barrios, in the comuna. But even, you know, I was over there and they were telling me about the grains, the corn, that I think was like 2 months ago, and the opposition used this as a flag, you know, as a campaign against the government of the president Maduro. And they're like, oh, we didn't get the grains, so we didn't get the corn and all the stuff. And I was like, oh, so do you know what happened?
In the package that they get, are you talking about in the food package?
In the clap box.
In the clap box. But they're talking about the production because they didn't get, the grain was supposed to come to Venezuela.
There was for them to refine it for harina.
There was the shipment coming to Venezuela, and the United States government stopped it. So who's to blame? And now we see what happened yesterday, with the soil that was going to Venezuela, with the proteins that was going to the people. And then the opposition used all that as a flag and be like, the government of Maduro is killing us. It's not the government. The government has so many projects to help the people. They have the CLAP. They have...
I don't think people know what the CLAP is.
So the CLAP is a... This was introduced about a year and a half ago, I think, maybe almost 2 years, as a way... It subsidized food packages that reach about 6 million households throughout the country.
I heard it now reaches 16 million, half the country.
It's 6 billion of families.
6 billion.
No, there are
people.
No 6 billion.
It's not 6 billion people in Venezuela.
No. I mean,
I wish
impact,
there were.
Yeah, no, the impact is like
16 million.
16 million, yeah. Expanded. 16 million, yeah.
So this is a program that they're subsidized food boxes, comes with, rice and beans and corn flour normally to make arepas, which, is a customary food in, food in Venezuela. Cooking oil, dried milk, pasta, sometimes pasta sauce. Most of the products are imported, although I did witness on this last trip, more and more Venezuela produced products going into the subsidized food. These boxes are delivered twice a month. You can qualify for this particular food package regardless of political affiliation. You do need, citizens do need to organize what is referred to as a community council. A community council is composed of a minimum of 10 households, regardless of political affiliation. And then once you have your community council, you can apply for subsidized food.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is imported. And was it last week or while we were there, I think Friday, the opening of the Foro de Sao Paulo in Caracas.
People don't know what Foro is.
Which is a... Well, that was the day. I'll tell you what the Foro is. But that particular day, that opening session of the Foro, was the day that the food imports were sanctioned from Mexico. So I do not believe that was a coincidence. That date was particularly targeted. And the Foro is a... Well, it's a political international forum of progressive and leftist political parties, governments, and activists. When we attended, we were invited to attend the opening session. At the time we were invited, we were told there were 400 people invited. When we got there, it was very clear it was at least twice that. The forum had been opened to social movements as well. As
from Venezuela, as well as guests from around.
Yes, and it was profound, the energy and the
amazing
engagement. Yeah,
it was amazing.
I just bring up the Foro just to say that while the U.S. is trying so hard to isolate Venezuela, there are people from around the world who go to things like the Foro de São Paulo, especially Latin America, to show their solidarity, the global South. And let's also remember in all of this, the main call has been hands off Venezuela. Leave Venezuela alone. And I think as living in the belly of the beast here in the U.S., to recognize that it's not our job to support another government, oppose another. Our job is to watch what our government is doing to interfere in the internal affairs of other governments. And in this case, especially right now in Venezuela, to try to block Venezuela off from doing normal trade relations with the rest of the world like any other country should be allowed to do is the height of imperial arrogance.
And that was actually one of the questions from CBP when they were taming. They were like, do you support Maduro? Immigration at the airport. And they were like, do you support Maduro?
Customs and
Border Patrol. And I was like, well, I'm not a Venezuelan. I did not vote for Maduro. And I do not comment about their politics. But they were trying so hard to get me into something with Maduro. And I was like, there's nothing. Why are you? But going back to our visit, which I think is really, really important for people to know what's happening. There is all the communities, for example, what they do. We went to 23 de Enero, El Panal. They have the bakery, So the people, what they do, they volunteer at the bakery. So that way they don't have to pay for the labor. So the product is cheaper than going to the market to get the bread. They have the, they made their own shirt, the clothes and everything. Everything's cheaper than the market. So they're trying all ways possible to survive and face the sanctions. And everywhere went to, everybody was clear. They all support Maduro. They live for the Bolivarian Revolution, something that they inherited from Chavez. And everybody is just... we went to the concert. I think you went to... Did you go to a concert? We went to a concert, and we had this old lady. It was about 75 years old. And she came out crying to us, saying, can you please tell the world what's happening, what they're doing to us in Venezuela, how they're killing us.
So I want to give out the number once again. If anybody wants to call in with comments or questions, you can do that at 202-588-0893. And I think it's important that we spend some time talking about what we can do. We're doing something today, and anybody who's in the D.C. area, if you have any time to join us to run down to the White House, we'll be at the White House at 2 p.m. holding a press conference about this latest round of sanctions and what that means for the Venezuelan people. And we'll also be talking about this shipment of soy products that was blocked in the Panama Canal. So that's 2 p.m. at the White House. And if anybody's listening who's in the media, please come down and hear us there. And we will be having regular protests. In fact, there is a day of protest called for very soon. For
Saturday
August
the 10th.
Saturday
is
the 10th.
A national day, international day of solidarity
with Venezuela.
For Venezuela.
So if people want to, again, contact us directly, you can go to radio@codepink.org, or you can go on to our website, codepink.org, to get more information. And Terry, are there other things that you recommend that people can do?
Well, the biggest thing that I would ask U.S. citizens to do is to have a conversation. I would really suggest a personal conversation, but phone call, email, written letter to your congressional members, Congress members, as well as senators, to really put pressure on the U.S. government to lift the sanctions against Venezuela. It's really important to understand and frame sanctions as a form of warfare. I will say Congressman Ro Khanna from the Silicon Valley in California deserves a huge shout out for his how vocal he is about lifting the sanctions.
And there is a bill saying that the Trump administration does not have the right to militarily intervene in Venezuela.
Correct. H.R. 1004.
So people should be supporting that. And anything else in our last moments here?
Well, I would really encourage people to follow us on Facebook at Code Pink. We post regularly articles that are of interest. And I would also encourage a reading of a couple alternative news sites, Venezuela Analysis, Orinoco Tribune, and one here that you can get electronically from the Center for Economic Policy and Research. They do a fantastic daily Latin America news roundup from all over the hemisphere. Of course, Venezuela being, you know, a priority focus at the moment, but it's a particularly informative daily roundup that they do.
So now that we're leaving, got to remind the people, 2 p.m. today outside the White House, we're going to have the press conference. Saturday, we're going to go and march in D.C. We got to make sure that everybody come united. We need to fight against this government. We cannot allow this government to keep doing this with Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, and any other country in the world. It's about humanity.
That's absolutely right. And we have aside from the very evil president we have in the White House, we have an evil man who is really doing the day-to-day, the dirty work of this policy, and that is John Bolton. And we often do protests at John Bolton's house, so come with us to do that as well. There's lots of ways to get involved. If you sign up on the Code Pink website, codepink.org, we can reach you with these ongoing activities. And also, for those of you who are listening from New York, the People's Economic Forum is a venue where there is lots of great events happening, and many of them have to do with Venezuela and Latin America. And as we started out this show today talking about Puerto Rico, let's end with that. A shout out to the people of Puerto Rico. And to say that we follow in the footsteps of people who are fighting and winning battles around the world for a more just and peaceful society.
Vamos, Boricua, no te dejes.
Vamos, Boricua, que viva Puerto Rico libre.
Viva Puerto Rico, viva Venezuela.
People power.
They say Code War, we say Code Pink. It's blood for oil, we know there's a link. They say Code War, we say Code Pink for freedom, Code Pink for peace, Code Pink till hunger and war have ceased. Code Pink for women, all genders and girls. Together we'll make peace.
Was Obama really the hero they say? Sure, we take him back in a heartbeat today. But he deported more folks than any president known. And he commanded and expanded the reign of the drone. They feed you lies, don't want you to think. They say Code Terror, we say Code Pink. They feed you lies, don't want you to think. They
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. That was Code Pink Radio with Medea Benjamin, a collaboration between WPFW and WBAI, sister stations. We're part of the Pacifica Network of commercial free listener sponsored community radio stations. And WBAI is in its summer membership and fundraising drive. In fact, we're in the final few days of that. I think PFW is in theirs as well. We're trying to raise funds to support programs like Code Pink. We're asking you, those of you listening to us right now, listening to this program, appreciate this new program, appreciate the collaboration between these two Pacifica radio stations. We're asking you to call us now at 516-620-3602. 516-620-3602. If you're just hearing this program for the very first time and are really pleased that this collaboration is taking place within the Pacifica Network, we're asking you to support that now. You can pledge any amount to the station right now in support of Code Pink. You can pledge $100 or more. You certainly can pledge $50 or $25. You could become a regular member to WBAI. The number, it's real simple, 516-620-3602. Just make the call. The folks at the call center will take your information and then you'll become a member. You know, you can become a sustaining member, a BAI buddy, for as little as $10 a month. Of course, you could pledge a little bit more if you like, if you can. But for $10 a month, you could become that sustaining member. 516-620-3602. And every month, that $10 or that $25 or that $50 would come out of your account into the coffers of WBAI, giving us that amount of money that we need to see each and every month. Coming up in a minute will be the Gary Null Show, but I'd like to share a special announcement about a program that's coming up tomorrow over WBAI.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer it tomorrow, hammer in the evening.
This Friday, August 9th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., WBAI presents More Pete Seeger in this, his centennial year. Hear Pete talking about topical folk music and the magazines that have featured it. Tom Paxton, Happy Traum, and others reminiscing about his influence, and a concert from the 70s, and more. right here on WBAI in New York.
Love between my brother.